and welcome to the second in the ECN podcast series. I'm David Kitchener, the Managing Director of All Things Media Limited, the company that brings you ECN, Electrical Contracting News, ECN.com and the new ECN Awards, which proved to be a great success last year and are scheduled again this year for December the 5th. During this podcast series, we will be covering all things electrical contracting. We will be interviewing contractors, suppliers, manufacturers and associations, all designed to help the electrical contractors do their job better. This podcast is entitled The Installer Gap and is all about upskilling amongst electrical contractors. As we all know, upskilling focuses on improving current skill sets so that installers can make progress in their jobs and find different roles and opportunities for further advancement. So to discuss this important topic, I am joined by Danny Putney and Paul Collins from the NIC EIC. Welcome, Danny. Welcome, Paul.
Nice to see you, David. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Thanks for the invite. And I think you're right. This is an important part of the future. Upskilling, you know, where the industry goes next is very exciting.
Absolutely. We've got some good things to cover here. We're also joined by Carly Weller, our illustrious editor of ECN. Welcome, Carly.
Hello, everyone. Really nice to meet you, Danny. Paul, we've met before as you kindly gave up your time to judge the ECN Awards last year and agreed to do the same this year, which we're really grateful for. I hope you had a great time at the awards last year.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great event, well set up and well run. But it was also great to see the winners of the awards, but also great to catch up with people from the industry that I haven't seen for a long while because of COVID. So, yeah, really great. And thanks for the invite again for this year.
Yeah, those kind of things are always good for networking, aren't they? I mean, everybody has a great time. And much to my surprise, at 1 a.m, we still had people dancing and jigging about on the dance floor.
Yeah, that wasn't me at 1 a.m.
Okay, before we start to discuss this important subject of upskilling, Danny, I understand you've spent 14 years' experience in the building engineering services sector, held several positions within the NIC-EIC. I also note you represent the NIC-EIC at various industry committees, including chair of the Competency Working Group, member of the PAS 2030 Steering Committee, and participating in the Each Home Counts work streams. How the hell do you have time to do anything else? How did it all start?
Well, I've worked for NIC for 20 years now, doing all sorts of different things.
I think and you only look 22. Amazing.
Thank you very much. I was going to say, I think the only job I haven't had is cleaner. I've done everything else at NIC. But I really got passionate in the building services side of things when we first set up an MCS scheme. So back in 2008, it was a really exciting opportunity within NIC-EIC to start in a different route than our core electrical, you know, the bolt-ons that go very nicely with our electrical schemes. And starting in MCS, looking at the green technologies, especially for NIC, I see solar PV is massive for our installers as an opportunity, more so in the last year than it has been in the 10 before that. But it was really exciting then setting up PAS 2030 with, you know, government to help with the energy efficiency of buildings in government grants.
So did you start as an electrician?
No, I was non-technical when I started at NIC.
And now look at you.
Certification. I'm very passionate about certification. I became a lead auditor in 2008 and sort of went from there, really. Head of standards at NIC. I see standards actually make me very excited. I'm one of those very, very small group of people that think that's a really interesting thing to do all day, every day.
No, I don't believe that. No, it's very exciting. I mean, you've come a long way in those 20 years, haven't you? It's amazing.
Yeah, journey with NIC has been fantastic, and it's a wonderful organisation to work for. And I really, the industry that we work in, it has great potential to support government in their ambitions, make consumers more safe in their homes. There's just so many different things that we get involved in that I just get very, very passionate about.
And do you, I always ask this question of associations and federations, which is quite an important thing in my view. Do you lobby government on various things?
We don't lobby, but we do participate in standards development. So we take feedback from our registered businesses, from assessments that we're delivering on how standards can be improved to make sure that electrical safety is very much, you know, the core of what we're delivering every day. And where we see non-conformities or where we see a need for best practice, we feed that into standards development, and we make sure that every iteration of standards that our certified businesses work to, they're better than the one before.
Right. Interesting.
I think the important thing about the lobbying was we work with our owners. We're owned by the Electrical Safety First charity and the Electrical Contractors Association. So they focus on lobbying more than we do in this context. So, you know, we work together as a group of three to influence government, to influence standards, to influence, you know, BSI, etc. So there is lobbying, but it's part of a wider group, of a wider sphere of influence.
Either way, collectively, you try to keep government in line.
try to make them do it better, yeah.
Try to help and support where we can.
Absolutely. It's very important, I think, for an association to be involved in that kind of thing. Paul, as Technical Director of the NIC-EIC, I understand you're instrumental in ensuring that technical integrity is at the heart of everything the NIC-EIC does. You actively, of course, participate in various committees and working group. It all began, I believe, with a solid foundation back to that electrical apprenticeship. Tell us about the journey.
Yeah, that's right. So I left school in 1990. I completed an electrical apprenticeship in 1993-94, just as sort of the recession was kicking in. I was told at the end of my apprenticeship, okay, you've got a month's worth of work. You know, that's it after that. But, you know, from there, I've been doing various roles over the year. I've retrained in gas. So I was Corgi registered back in the day. Plumbing, heating qualifications, renewable qualifications. So, you know, working on the tools until 2005, you know, it gives you a wide range of, you know, knowledge and experience of working in the industry, not just talking about it, but actually doing it, which is a great, it's a fantastic foundation for then moving into the other side of things around regulation, standards, etc. So, yeah, I joined NICIC back in May 2009, so 15 years coming up. So not quite as long as Danny, but I've still been around for a while. Started off working on the technical helpline, taking calls from contractors. So you're there taking calls about, anything and everything technical related. And then over the years, yeah, carried out a number of different roles with NRC and, currently technical director, which encompasses Danny's team around risk and compliance, the technical helpline, the field assessment team. So there's probably 250 of us across the technical team. So, yeah, that keeps me occupied on a daily basis at the moment.
So it's fair to say that there's not much you two don't know about the subject matter.
I think between us and the team, there's not a lot we don't know in that context.
No,
it's a wider team that supports us all.
And we do find our certified businesses will always ask that one question that you haven't thought of. You know, you think you've thought of everything, you think you've covered everything, and the businesses that we have on the register always find that one question you haven't got covered yet.
I'll come back to you a bit later because I'm interested in some of the more ridiculous questions that you've been asked over the years.
Gosh.
It'd be a little bit light, but that'll be strange. But anyway, as I alluded to earlier, this podcast discussion will focus on the importance of upskilling amongst the electrical contractors, especially bearing in mind the number of new technologies entering the scope of works for installers. Danny, you recently chaired the DESNZ. I won't ask you what that stands for, but it sounds quite good.
DESNZ.
In fact, what does it stand for?
It's the Department for Energy, Security and Net Zero.
Right. Oh, that makes sense. Okay, that's a working group. And looking at the barriers, which is interesting, the barriers to upskilling that installers, you know, have to face. To name but two areas, of course, the increases in renewable heating technology and green technology in particular. Can you elaborate on some of these technologies for us and the challenges the installers face in this regard?
Absolutely, yeah. So government, as is sort of regularly reported, are looking for 600,000 heat pumps annually from 2028. And they need a skilled workforce to deliver this, you know, really ambitious goal for
Do you think they're on course for that?
we're quite a way off course. I mean, last year, the heat pump training in the UK doubled. The Heat Pump Association recently put out some statistics about how, you know, the workforce has doubled over 2023, and the ambitions that government have set forward are driving that. But I believe in the UK at the moment, we have just under 1,000 certified heat pump installers. So whilst people might be doing the training, they're not then necessarily working in the industry. And there's a number of different reasons that we've sort of started to identify, not quite sort started to correct what those barriers are, but at least identify what they are.
And, presumably, Danny, when these guys and gals are trained in installing heat pumps, presumably that represents another revenue stream for them.
Absolutely, it's another revenue stream, but there's got to be a stable revenue stream. And, you know, government sometimes pits and falls, you know, and
yes.
Businesses yeah. need a stable business plan to pay their mortgages, to make sure that they can pay their bills at the end of the month. And whilst I believe heat pump is going in that direction, in the past, even in the last couple of years, government changes the targets, which means that maybe they're not going to get as many calls as they need to make sure that it's worth the investment of changing their business models, really.
And are the public embracing heat pumps?
I think that's another one that we've identified as a blocker, is the consumer awareness of the technologies. Again, it's becoming more of a common thing. We're starting to see it in general media, stories about how heat pumps actually are a really good heating solution for domestic properties. Government's also working on removing barriers such as DNO notifications when an installation is in the design phase. But it needs to be more consumer awareness, more stability to the industry from a government ambition.
Yeah, it's like everything else, isn't it? If anybody needs or wants to reach out to consumers, one needs deep pockets to do so. And the government are doing that to a certain extent, as I see it, with their TV ads and so on. But you feel they could do a lot more, I guess.
It is one of those where, you know, where is the penetration points with consumers? And you've got to make it a decision that they're willing to go along with. You know, there is the argument, oh, you're reducing your carbon output. But, you know, we're coming out of a cost of living crisis. Consumers have got to see a financial reward as well as an altruistic reward, because, you know, it's been really hard times the last couple of years. And we have to always bear in mind that, you know, the UK citizens need to see a benefit for them in the long term, because they haven't got the money in the bank.
And is this a perceived barrier to electricians wanting to take up the skill set, if you like, of installing heat pumps, because the lack of awareness out there in the big wide world?
The main barrier we identified for installers was the stable business model. You know, currently a certified operating electrical contractor can work week in, week out doing electrical work. Why would he change his business model to something that actually might not be stable? Because, you know, they're running a business and they've also got their bills to pay. They need a stable salary for themselves. So is it worthwhile?
So therefore it is a separate business model as opposed to adopting it within their existing business model. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's if they're taking part of their business, either themselves or their registered qualified supervisor, a competent installer that they're employing, and sending them for training. It's not just the cost of the training, it's not having them out earning money on those 5 days that the course might take. It's dedicating them to going out and doing designs for consumers that may not then develop into a job that they're getting. You know, there's many different things that when they're putting it together and saying, even as part of my electrical contracting business, I'm going to have this stream, they've got to invest in freeing up the resource to do it when they're doing it. And we are seeing a huge increase in heat pump installations. We are seeing a massive increase in consumer awareness. So it's becoming a lot more stable, a business model. But in order for you to change what definitely is going to pay the rent, you've got to know that that's going to be there for the next three years.
As a publisher, we're in other industries. And it's the same old, same old. When you're talking to an installer and when it comes to training or actually even going to exhibitions, actually, why should I spend 5 days training and lose 5 days pay effectively? That's the difficulty, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you can't.
But are you getting larger companies, Danny, who can afford, obviously, that guys are on a regular salary, that can afford to send a bunch of guys on a course like that?
You can see from MCS's increase over the last 2 years in their register that businesses are making that transition.
Larger businesses,
medium-sized businesses, and some sole traders have made that transition. We are seeing that in the companies that are coming through. The speed at which it's happening is not quite aligned to sort of the government ambitions for how many people they want skilled and out there working today.
I think there's some really interesting bits in this conversation. If you look at what energy providers are doing at the moment to raise awareness with consumers, you know, some of the big six are actually, you know, installing heat pumps for very low cost. They're using the government boiler upgrade scheme to help subsidise these costs. So I think energy providers are probably doing the most awareness with consumers compared to anybody, you know, government and you know, the industry itself. So I think people are becoming more aware, and yes, there is a transition, but the transition won't pick up unless the consumer is asking for it. So if the consumer is asking, okay, my boiler needs to be replaced, it's not a distressed purchase, I'm planning to replace my boiler, I want to explore a heat pump, the more of that we get, the more businesses will be asked for that, then they got to start looking at it. You know, whether it's a gas engineer that needs to upskill into heat pumps, or whether it's an electrical contractor that's working with a gas engineer or a plumber to bring those skills in. You know, there's different business models and different ways to approach it. But the key, as Danny said, is consistency. If we look back to MCS, to the solar feed-in tariffs, you know, we had a boom and bust scenario with that. 2012, the feed-in tariffs were cut. We saw a massive spike, then it all dropped off. And, you know, over the years, people have been burnt from that. They're saying to us as a certification body, well, I'm not going to renew because I can't guarantee that this is going to continue. You know, it's really, you know, difficult for government. They put money into a market to prime it, to get it going, then withdraw the funding, but sometimes they withdraw it too early. So yeah, like Danny says, stability is key to this, but I think consumer drive, consumer awareness is growing, but it needs to be more.
And so this awareness is filtering through, but we think it's probably not filtering through quick enough.
Yeah, there's that. And also, once you start looking at the cost of a heat pump installation versus a very straightforward combination boiler swap, you know, there's a big difference in cost. You know, £3,000 versus £10,000, £12,000, depending on the complexity of it. That's why the boiler upgrade scheme will help. There's a grant to support that, so it will reduce the price. So it's a big shift. But also, it's a big shift in your mindset as a consumer, how you use the system. You know, with a heat pump, it's set up, you set a temperature, you leave it. With a gas boiler, you come home, feeling cold, turn the thermostat up, a couple of minutes to put my hand on the radiator, I automatically feel warm. So there's a mindset shift for the user as well as, you know, the industry as well. So there's a journey that we're on.
Before we all came on live, Paul and I were having a conversation about various things, and the thing that always comes home to me when I talk to electricians and electrical contractors is that they don't like change. is the heat pump side of things, do they see that as change, and is that a barrier in their mind or not?
I think they do see it as change, because it is. You know, it's a different skill set. It's a different technology. But if you look at the gas industry, the gas installer, they've got a lot of the basic skills that will enable them to move into that. But it's while I'm busy doing my gas work, why do I need to think about anything else? I may be 20 years from retirement. I can't see gas going anywhere soon, so I'll just carry on with that. So, yeah, some people are adverse to change. But then you get the other ones that can actually see this is coming. I'm getting asked for it more. I need to get ready for it. So you do get a cross-section of installer thinking, actually, you know, this is where my business needs to be in 5 years.
But ideally, we want it led by the consumer, don't we?
If I'm being asked for it, I'm losing work because I can't do it. Crumbs, what do I need to do next?
Yes.
I think we need to consider as well that, you know, we've been there with solar PV. 12 years ago, solar PV was a smaller technology. It's a core electrical technology now. You know, it's
within the water and more regulations. More and more electricians are getting into the solar side, aren't they?
Absolutely. And it's become a normal technology. It's not an unusual technology. It's not out of the norm.
But that the solar side of things obviously comes under the upskill word. And are there a large percentage now of installers literally doing the solar thing?
Well, I suppose it depends on in where you look for the numbers. And so we have around 36,000 certified businesses across our electrotechnical schemes. Danny, how many of those are MCS for solar PV specifically?
Solar PV specifically, about 1,900.
So there's a number there that are on the MCS scheme, but that doesn't mean they can't do it outside of the MCS. You know, they can do, but we don't specifically track those numbers. But, you know, there's a couple of thousand plus businesses that are doing solar PV installs via the microgeneration certification scheme. Mm.
So we talked about heat pumps. We talked about solar, that which is another upskill opportunity, of course. What about the, let's use the word, challenges again of green tech? Are the electricians, electrical contractors, embracing the green tech side of things?
Well, you can see, you know, we touched on solar PV, but that's been notified through MCS. There's over 2 million installations from what they're feeding back to us. The next evolution of this is batteries and electrical energy storage systems, you know, to supplement these. So the green tech stuff in respect of, you know, adding to systems, I think, is there. It's upskilling. In the electrical industry, we talk about Electrician Plus, which is a mechanism that you take your core electrical competence as an electrician and add to that, add qualifications to it, add personal development to this over a time, you know, to upskill into these other areas. So it becomes more business as usual as a specialism. So, you know, that's happening. And it's again back to consumer demand. You know, you can go in and fit LED lighting, for example. You know, you can't buy anything else other than LED lighting now. So you've got your, you know, energy efficiency approach there. But I think also, you know, it's an electrician becoming more of an energy advisor than just a standard electrician. I think that's an evolutionary thing that's happening as well.
Yes, and if I'm an electrician and I want to upskill, having listened to this, what's the best thing to do? Contact the NICEIC, I guess, and say, look, what areas do you feel I can upskill into? Does that how it works?
Absolutely. We, you know, via NICEIC training, we have a number of routes, a number of options. So if you're a gas engineer and you want to get into the heat pump world, for example, you know, we have qualifications around heat pump installations, low temperature heating systems, water regulation. So, you know, from a mechanical perspective, we've got that covered. From an electrical perspective, we do training for EV charge point installations, electrical energy storage, solar PV. So
that's another big upskill, isn't it? The EV side of things, electrical vehicle charging.
Yeah, it's a big sector. You know, you can see more electric vehicles on the road day by day. The numbers are increasing still. So absolutely. And then, you know, we're getting into a point now of the second-hand EV market. So you've had the
EV. Oh, really?
Yeah, so people are now moving on to the second generation of car, you know, lease cars, for example, going back. And so now, you know, you'll be able to pick up a lot of secondhand EVs on the, you know, Auto Trader, etc. And so these are need charge points installing as well. So, you know, the market was there for first-time purchase, but now the second-hand market's coming through, that you'll need a charge point for that as well. So, you know, it's a market that's it's going to be there for a number of years. Also, thinking about building regs, you're building new build property now, you've got to put provision in for EV charging. So, yeah, absolutely upskill.
So there are many, well, quite a few areas that the electrician contractor can upskill into. In terms of upskilling, to use a phrase, the world is their oyster, I guess, isn't it?
Absolutely, in that respect, yeah.
Electrical Contracting News is the leading title for the electrical contracting industry. Packed monthly with news, views, product releases, case studies, and much more, it's a must-read for any electrical contractor looking to stay informed, source new business, and increase their profits. If you prefer to get your news online, get along to electricalcontractingnews.com, which is updated daily. ECN is the last word in electrical contracting. Don't miss out. Stay up to date with ECN in print and online.
The investment in skills and training is undoubtedly a part of the solution. Current government grants, I don't know too much about that, but I'm sure you'll elaborate. Current government grants, I understand, fall short of the level of incentive needed to encourage busy installers to take time out to upskill. We talked about the losing the day's pay and so on and so on, which I believe is reflected in the poor take-up rates. Is this correct? Are there many government schemes? Can electricians tap into anything from that respect?
Yeah, there are grants for people that want to upskill. For example, there's a £500 grant for engineers that want to upskill around heat pumps. Whether that's going to be around for a long period of time, I don't think it will.
Does that, at the moment, if that's available, does that negate the train of thought that, well, I don't want to lose a day's pay if I'm going to upskill, but hey, I can upskill and I can get a grant to pay for it?
I think it would help. That, you know, decision making process in your head. Is it worth doing now? Is it worthwhile investing? So you've got that grant. There's also skills boot camps as well that you can apply for government funding to put on a package of courses, you know, whether it's a boot camp for electrical, you know, EV, PV, sales, storage, etc. So there's mm-hmm. different approaches and different training providers. Some offer it, some don't. But it's definitely something to look at if you're considering upskilling, looking at what's available. But you know, there are a couple of grants out there. Danny, are you aware of any more training grants that are available?
No, you've named them pretty much, Paul. And I mean, I sort of support what Paul said and just sort of caveat that, you know, it's a good start by government. It's not that they're not doing anything. They are putting the investment in. It is a good start, but it doesn't quite go far enough. I think, you know, what we are talking about is a business, you know, stopping work, like we've already said earlier. They are paying for the training and not earning money on that day. And they need to know that there is the return, a guaranteed sustainable return for their business after they've done it, because they are businesses and they are prepared to put in the investment. But it goes back again to the earlier point of, is this a business model? Is this a revenue stream that is going to have longevity for their business?
So you've got it. You were saying on the heat pump side of things, coming back to that, you've got about 1,000 certified people now. Guys and gals, I guess.
Yeah, we're talking about businesses in this context, not the individuals within the business. We certify a business, and that business could be a sole trader or it could be a multinational. So, yeah, that varies in that.
So you certify a business?
Yes.
And if that business has 10 electricians, how do you get each one of those certified? Or I guess you don't, or is that covered by the company with the certification?
That's covered by the company. So we certify the business. We make sure they got management systems and processes in place to ensure that the workforce is competent, that they supervise the workforce, that they go and look at the work. So it's a model of supervision where they're overseeing competent staff.
So you have to do your due diligence, but then you trust them to do the right thing with their individual staff and make sure that they're doing the right things.
Yeah, as part of our due diligence, what we're doing is an annual assessment where we're looking at their systems, we're looking at their record keeping, we're looking at their staff training records, we're looking at their CPD records. We're also going out to look at the work as well. So, you know, it covers the whole process of, okay, you've won a job, through to how did you determine the person or people who had done that job are competent, show us your training records for that, then we go and look at that work. So, you know, you follow that whole process through.
Yeah, and there's different surveillance requirements for different sizes of business. So whilst we certify a business, if you do, you know, a specialist type of work or a low volume of a type of work, we might only be with you once a year. If you're doing a high volume or a huge range of different types of work, we might come and visit you every month.
Yeah. It's got to be a requirement, that sort of thing, isn't it? Because you bless everybody in the world, you can't trust everybody to make sure they do the right thing. But that's where you come in as a can I call you a governing body?
NIC, certification body.
That's the word. Sorry. Yes. I'm interested in these boot camps. You mentioned boot camps. How do these boot camps work? Do the government instigate them, and then do they come to, say, the NIC, EIC to run them? How do they work?
So the government set up a framework around the skills boot camps, and they work with the local skills partnership council. So in generally in regional, in, you know, Hampshire or Surrey, for example. And what training providers do, they put together a bid to go to the local LSIP, the local partnership, and say, we would like to offer X, Y and Z courses, and we would bid for money to run those courses. So it's yes, government money, government initiative, but locally funded and locally sourced, because you know that way you can then address the local skills needs. You know, Southampton, where we may need a different set of skills than where Danny is in Luton, for example. So you know the local skills partnerships are involved in control of where that money's going and what's happening, which is great because you can get a local solution to a local problem.
Interesting, but ultimately they need you experts to make sure that these things run properly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You need, you know, training providers, ethical training providers that put on the right training, the right qualifications. There's a requirement for 60 hours of training over the skills boot camp. So that's why it could be a number of different courses. So, yeah, it's got to be right. It's got to be what the industry's needing and the local areas needs as well.
And where do the electricians go to access or find out about these boot camps? Is it their local government or is it the NRC-ERC?
It'll be the local training provider, to be fair. If the local training provider is offering skills boot camps and funding via that way, they'll be able to talk about what they can offer locally.
Interesting. A lot of there should be a lot of upskilling being done. But one area that I'm interested in, and Paul and I kind of alluded to this before we went live, as it were. Another side of our business here, I mean, as you know, we publish ECN and so on. Another side of our business here is we publish a magazine and websites and so on called Essential Install. That is the AV and home automation market. Now, I've never been an installer. I'm actually a humble publisher. People laugh at me when I say that, but I am. But the fact of the matter is, you know, we have a side to our business, which is AV and home automation. Now, that in this industry is not, in terms of market size, my understanding is that the electrical contracting industry is probably worth about 25.4 billion or something like that in this country. They're market worth figures. The AV and home automation industry is worth something like 2 to 3 billion, but it's still a worthwhile market. I've always encouraged, and as I said to Paul earlier on, I've always encouraged electricians and contractors, installers, to come to the show because we want to grow the install industry. And so therefore they come along to the show. They learn about the install industry. And again, it's upskilling, of course, but it's another string to their bow. And as I said to Paul earlier on, and I tend to get shot down in flames when I say this to electricians, but you know, you guys go into a house and you wire a house, you finish your wiring and everything else. And then you might job done, go home, but why not upsell and get to learn about the custom install industry? Maybe hang some flat screens at its very basic form. Maybe cut some holes in the ceiling, in the walls for in-ceiling, in-wall ceiling speakers. Maybe progress, and I know they do, progress to fitting a home cinema. And I know the ECA, in talks with the ECA, and my understanding now, they've probably got about maybe 3,000 to 4,000 members. As I understand it, the majority of those people are wanting to not move into, but adopt the AV and home automation side of things. Do you get talking about that that particular industry in your day-to-day workings?
We do, but not to a great extent. But I'm totally with what you're saying. You know, it makes a lot of sense. You're doing a new build. In a lot of cases, the electrical contractor's putting in data cables, maybe some cables for, you know, Sky TV, etc. So it's just
Hang things on the end of those cables.
Yeah, it's just a simple step away from that. And absolutely, I totally agree that it's something they could do and should do because it gives you another string to your bow. And over a period of time, you get more proficient at it, get better at it, take on more skills. But eventually, that can lead from an installation-only business to actually a service and maintenance business. You've installed all this equipment in people's homes, you've built up a customer base, now you need to maintain it. You know, it's firmware, software upgrades, pieces of kit that need to be replaced for a new, you know, flashier, whizzier version. So you can actually transition your business over a number of years from an install business to a service and maintain business and service your customer base that way. So yeah, I'm totally with you, totally support that.
Well, one thing that comes into the home automation industry now, of course, are service level agreements. And to be perfectly frank with you, the consumers are paying on a monthly basis. So there's a fee on a monthly basis to actually maintain, to have an SLR in place. So whenever somebody has a problem, they call Fred, Bill or Peter or whatever, and they come and fix their TVs or whatever. And that's another growth area in that industry and another revenue stream, actually.
Yeah, that's the service and maintain bit. If you think about an electrical installation when I was an apprentice back in the 90s, it was fit and forget. You know, there was nothing smart about it, nothing intelligent about it. It just worked. You've done the job, been paid, and you may never go back. But with this model, you can actually do the work, get paid, get it all set up. And like you say, get a monthly fee for a maintenance contract that keeps you going for many years to come. So, yeah, it's a very logical step forwards.
Yeah, and you kind of lock in loyal customers. I mean, maybe that's something that we can have a conversation outside of this, because I'd like to talk to the NIC per se, just to talk to them to see how we can help with that industry that we are in heavily with our show and everything else.
I was just going to add, you know, the home automation is very much a growth market. And, you know, like we've talked about, once there's a sustainable business model, our registered businesses are interested in it. And it is a growth market. And I think one of the statistics I was looking at just recently said that, you know, we've gone over the last 10 years from having no percentage, like 26% of houses in the UK have more than one home automation technology within them. That's only going to increase as time goes on. And what we're going to see is the sort of teenagers of today, the young under 30s of today, they want these technologies in their homes. They see it as an added benefit, as a desirable factor when purchasing a property. So for the electrical industry, it is a growth market. It is something that they're going to be asked to fit more and more of as time goes on.
Well, that's why from that side of the business, that's why we encourage electrical contractors and electricians to come into that marketplace, because not only is it good for them, and as Paul says, it gives them another string to their bow generally, and clearly their financial bow, but of course it helps grow that industry as well. And that by default can and will create the awareness to the end user, because we've got more people out there talking to the end user on what that's all about. But yeah, interesting subject. I'll come and talk to you about that. So what about other upskilling potential, Paul and Danny? Any other areas? You know, we talk solar, we talk heat pumps. Anything else where these guys can go and upskill?
There are things around like domestic ventilation systems is a very hot topic in respect of air quality.
Interesting.
You know, as an electrician, I used to install kitchen and bathroom extract vents and fans. Didn't really, you know, do any testing, didn't do any commissioning as such back in the day. But now you've got heat recovery systems where you can actually, you know, take out warm air from the property, reuse that.
Well, HVAC general, isn't it, Paul?
Yeah, there's a good opportunity there. You know, you can install the ducting, commission, you know, that's another, you know, area of upskilling that you could offer as part of your services. But I think in most of the other bits we've touched on around net zero, AV, et cetera. So that, I think that covers most of what's happening out there with technology at the moment. But the reality is it will never stop. You know, we can sit here today and next week something else will come along and think, well, that's interesting. I need to get into that.
Briefly mentioned battery storage earlier as well.
Yes.
Battery storage and ventilation, like Paul said, I think are going to be really more important technologies as time goes on, and not in the long distance. I'm talking next 3 to 5 years.
Interesting.
Once we unlock the potential of using your EV as your battery, that unlocks the doors for a lot of potential. You know, come home from work, if you're, you know, working away from home, plug your car in, use the car to feed the house, you know, during the evening. That's when your power's, you know, is the most expensive. Recharge the battery overnight when it's its cheapest. So, you know, you can actually use your EV for so much more than we do today. That's an exciting future.
Well, so the message, obviously, we haven't finished by any means, but I mean, the message from this podcast is that you guys and girls out there can earn more money, you go and upskill, and then the world is your oyster. You get involved in some of these other areas that we've alluded to today.
Absolutely. And I think these areas that we're talking about, what's coming in the future, they will be with us as business as usual, you know, very soon. The way technology progresses and life progresses, you know, you blink and you're going to miss it.
Well, of course, within these four or five or however many areas we've talked about today, there's so many diverse things within those areas alone.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely there is.
Incredible.
There's lots of diversity. And I'd also add to the conversation that, you know, this will be underpinned by regulation in the you know, near future. We've just seen the end of a government consultation on what future homes and future buildings should look like and should incorporate, and they are making direct reference to the technologies that we've discussed today as mandatory if you are retrofitting or in new builds. So these are things that, you know, whilst today are driven by consumer demand, will soon be driven by regulation and requirements.
Yeah, yeah.
And then supporting that, yeah, there'll be frameworks around competence of demonstrating the, you know, individuals undertaking the work competent, whether they're doing short courses to upskill as a CPD course, or whether it's somebody who's experienced in the industry going through an experienced worker assessment. You know, these different routes are available. And you know, NICIC's perspective, we can help with that. You know, as we talked about earlier, we've got a number of training courses, we've got experienced worker assessment. So there's a lot we can do to help businesses get ready for this.
Do you get many this is a strange question, because every time I follow an electrical van on the motorway or wherever, you always see the NICEIC logo. Does literally all electricians know of what you guys do or what you don't do? Courses and so on and so on?
I think they're aware as an industry of who NICIC are, but not necessarily about the level of support and, you know, added services that we have. So, yeah, it's known, but I'm not sure it's well known that we offer a lot of these training courses to support and help develop their businesses and their business model. You know, we talk about it. We have a quarterly magazine called Connections. We've been running a whole series of articles over the last couple of years around heat pumps, the future home, what it all looks like. You know, and we're trying to say, look, think of this.
To the trade, to
our certified businesses that we've been talking about here. Here's your opportunities. Look at this. This is how we can help you.
Brilliant. Carly, there was a question you wanted to talk about, wasn't there?
So obviously we've talked about a lot about the opportunities available for electrical contractors and electricians, but there is still a massive skills gap that everyone, you know, is constantly reported about. And, you know, we're trying to encourage people to get into the industry. Is it difficult to keep people in the industry?
I don't think overall it's difficult to keep people in the industry once they're in the industry. Okay, they get to retirement age and retire. I'm not counting that in there, but when you know, you're in it, it's such a diverse industry. You can go many different ways with it. I think the challenge that we have is the people getting to retirement ages, more of those than actually what we're bringing in at the front end. You know, so the future of the industry is suffering because of this, and we need to get more people involved in apprentices, in apprenticeships, in that world, so they can start their career journey. And we need to think about, you know, how we bring older learners in, somebody's career changing, not a shortcut course, not any, you know, corners to be cut, but doing the right level of training, you know, that somebody comes through, whether the, you know, last week they may have been delivering milk, for example, and now they want to become an electrician to get involved in this energy transition that we're talking about. So, you know, it's encouraging more people in, getting them in through their apprenticeship, and then getting them out there to understand, you know, what's available. And, you know, all the stuff we've been talking about here on the podcast will become business as usual for many contractors in the coming years. So, yeah, it's about getting more people into the industry and taking them on the right journey. I think once we're there, I think most people are there until they retire.
Well, what I find interesting, back in the day, and I know I look 25, I'm just a little older, but of course, you know, apprenticeships were the thing to have. And that then there was kind of a lull, I think. But now apprenticeships, a lot of people are talking about apprenticeships per se. It's kind of becoming in vogue again, isn't it? To go out and get yourself an apprenticeship rather than, I don't know, butter bread or something, you know.
I'm also seeing that change, David. And I think it was, you know, much needed, because we did go through sort of a 20-year gap where, you know, trades weren't exciting. It wasn't, you know, the pathway that schools or society was encouraging our youngsters to go down. And we have seen a reformation in that. My son's 24 and has just finished his apprenticeship and entered the market as a tradesman. And I'm really proud that he chose that as his route. He's got a job for life. He'll never need to, you know, want for a job, but it's something that qualifications, the training, the skills and the experience that he's gained through the apprenticeship program means that he will always be able to pay his rent. And, you know, his father and I are really, really proud that he chose that route. My daughter's just choosing her GCSEs, and they gave her vocational options. She was given options, and she's actually taken design, technical design, as one of her GCSE options, which, should she come into the electrical trade when she reaches 18, will be a firm foundation for the qualifications that she may choose to go down. So I'm physically seeing that change, that beginning of a push. But like Carly mentioned, we have still got a gap. We've got a 20-year gap. We've got people exiting, and during that 20 years when they were working, no one knew was coming in. Or not no one, that's an exaggeration, but you know what I mean.
But now, you know, this whole podcast, now we're talking about this upskilling, the upskilling thing. You don't have to be, this is just my view, you don't have to be just an electrician anymore. And what can I say, earn the same money for the next 5 to 10, 15 years, because simply through upskilling, you can, one would hope you can double, treble the money you've got coming in. So it's just a very important subject.
But Paul's proved that when he's done his introduction, hasn't he? Electrician, plumber, renewable installer, gas installer, you know, the options are there once you've got a solid foundation.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So that's about it. We'll start wrapping it up. But Paul, Danny, is there anything else you would like to just bring in and talk about? I think we've covered some good stuff, actually. Is there anything else you'd like to bring in?
Just that, you know, I've been in the industry since 1990. For a number of years, it sort of sat pretty static and stable. This is an energy, transition, an energy revolution in respect of, you know, electrification of heat, producing our own, storing our own and using our own. So it's, for me, the most exciting time that I've ever been involved in respect of the future. You know, you're driving an EV, you use that to power your house. You know, this is such an exciting bit. We can almost become self-reliant if we've got the right systems. Well, actually, we can become self-reliant if we've got the right systems installed. So you give yourself protection from, you know, energy shortages. You give yourself protection about energy costs. But as an electrician, you can solve those problems for consumers.
I couldn't agree more. Wonderful time to be in the industry. That's about it for this recording. We've obviously covered a lot on this very important subject of upskilling, which leaves me to say thank you to our two NIC EIC guests, Danny Putney and Paul Collins.
Thank you very much for having.
Yeah, thank you.
Also, thank you to our illustrious editor, Carly Weller. And remember, if you want to be included in Electrical Contracting News, ECN, do contact Carly or Kelly Byne, the group ad manager. We are aiming to produce these podcasts on a monthly basis. In fact, probably more frequent now because we're having such a take-up. So if you want to get involved, contact Carly or Kelly. Our podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. So keep an eye out for the promotion of this recording. Have a great day and goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the ECN podcast. Please subscribe to this podcast in your chosen podcast app so you never miss an episode. Stay up to date with ECN in print and online. Visit electricalcontractingnews.com.